26-year-old Allison from Fresno, California writes, and this is interesting, Joe, because we did get a few letters along these lines. I'm an elementary teacher, and I want to know what you would say to all of those parents who do not want their children reading Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of all the books, and I'm planning on reading Half-Blood Prince to my fourth grade class.
I'd say what I've always said. I think they're very moral books. I truly believe that. There are people who are uncomfortable with the fact that I explore morality to an extent. In other words, the children challenge accepted authority. They do break rules. I think those are healthy things. I'm never going to agree with someone who feels that you should shut up and do what you're told because I'm older than you. That I just don't believe that that is a good basis for discipline or education. I really don't.
All right, there's J.K. Rowling answering Katie Couric's question. Actually, it's a fan's question in her recent interview, and it was an exclusive interview with the author of the Harry Potter series of books. Now on its sixth, going toward its seventh. During that interview, she tipped her hand that she is already working on the seventh and projected final book in what has turned out to be, for its publisher, for Rowling, and for everyone attached to the merchandising and the films that have come from this book, a real success. In worldly terms, I mean, you want to talk about success the way that the culture and increasingly the church talks about it? She's got people reading her books. She must be doing something right. She's got people seeing her movies. She must be doing something right. But when it comes to Harry Potter, those kinds of ordinary measures of success that we've adopted in the church all get tossed aside. And that is, yes, she's successful. How is she being successful? What's she writing? What are those stories really all about? Well, I've made it very clear, and we haven't talked about Harry Potter in a long, long time, but I made it very clear that with the earliest of the novels, sat down and read them to my daughter. We read them together. And the purpose for that was, look, I thought they might be interesting. But you know what I noticed? And I had a conversation with a fellow pastor about this. As the novels progressed, these things got darker and more dangerous and a bit more sinister. And I don't know if I would have known early on where it was headed if I would have done that. So the latest one is out, the sixth, The Half-Blood Prince. You see it everywhere you go. Will you be reading this book? Will you let your kids read it? Should Christians be reading the Harry Potter novel? It's open lines this Thursday, July the 21st. That question, your answer, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This is the last hour of open lines this week, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's a simple question. I want to hear your answer to it. Should Christians be reading the Harry Potter book? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. We will be giving away Dr. Jean Edward Beath's book called Reading Between the Lines. It's a great book. We haven't talked to him about that in a long time. A Christian Guide to Literature. And he deals with this kind of literature, the literature that explores things like sorcery and witchcraft and magic. That's all part and parcel of the Harry Potter books. You know, we had a guest on once who said, look, if you just look at this Harry Potter novel as a set of fiction, it really uses magic, sorcery, witchcraft, wizardry is the word they use, as nothing more than a device. This is what the guest said. It's not a book about witchcraft or wizardry. It's about a book about a boy and his friends and his teachers and his archenemy, and they all just kind of happen to be magical people who employ magic. And I thought to myself, you know, he might be right. In the same way that, you know, you heard about the old Star Trek series, they said, look, it was just a Western set in outer space. That's what Gene Roddenberry said it was, a Western set in outer space. Nothing more than that. And all of the flash and the dash and the ship and the weapons and the jargon was all window dressing for the story they were telling about these characters. Do you think that's all the more harmless Harry Potter is? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, there is someone who's been very outspoken. Have we had her on the show? No. I've had her book on my shelf for a long time. Her name is Connie Neal. She's written a book called The Gospel According to Harry Potter. She does not believe that Harry Potter is necessarily something that Christians ought to stay away from. In fact, Neal believes that there is a real inconsistency in Christians' concerns over Harry Potter.
She uses these things as a literary device that are absolutely forbidden in the Bible, which is why it's understandable that some Christians choose not to go there. But Christians seem to have embraced wholeheartedly The Lord of the Rings and the sorcery in there and the Chronicles of Narnia.
Now, she's making a good point, isn't she? It's a point we've made here on this program before. If you have a problem with the Harry Potter novels, how substantively are they different from the Chronicles of Narnia or from the Lord of the Rings trilogy? These things have become staples in the literature, that is the storytelling of Christian households for the most part. They include sorcery, they include magic, they include bad guys and good guys who use sorcery and magic. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you agree or disagree with Connie Neal? Is there a fundamental inconsistency with how Christians have reacted to Harry Potter versus how they've reacted to more staid pieces of literature like The Lord of the Rings or The Chronicles of Narnia? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Oh, I got to make a note here because that made me think of something. Just a minute. There we go. I'll come back to that in a minute. Now, Connie Neal also says that when it comes to the message of the Harry Potter books, she doesn't really have a big problem.
The actual messages in the story are very biblical. In fact, we read through them. We looked at them in light of the Bible. We had a Harry Potter book club and Bible study.
All right. Now, I might even agree with her that the message is good. But, Connie, if you're going to do Bible study, study the Bible. If you're not going to call it a book club, if you're going to study Harry Potter books or Mayberry television series or any other books, if you're going to do Bible study, do God the favor of actually studying the Bible when you do that. With that laid aside, she says the message is biblical. Now, I'll tell you what, Harry Potter is a very moral little boy. Sometimes it makes the fiction almost unbelievable how moral and upstanding he is. And I've read these novels. I have not read the latest one. He may turn really, really bad in the latest one, but I haven't seen any evidence of it in the previous novels. One more cut here from Neal before we go to the phones. She really thinks that the author of the Harry Potter novels, J.K. Rowling, has been misrepresented.
Actually, I think Christians owe her an apology. On Christian radio, I've heard, that she studied witchcraft. Oh, she uses real spells. Absolutely untrue. There's no evidence for that. She does attend the Church of Scotland. And when asked if she believed in God, she said, yes, I do, which makes my opponents, more angry with me.
That was a question that Katie Couric did not ask her. But it's interesting to find out from Neal, who's done the research there, that this is, in fact, a woman who at least professes to be a Christian by her church membership in the Church of Scotland. That might come as a surprise to you. You might have read something that says, she's actually a witch and she practices what she preaches in her books. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's start with Jonathan, who calls from his car. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi.
What's your question or comment?
Well, I've been reading these books. I've read all five, and I'm starting on the sixth one now. And I just have to say, you can read them just for fun, but you don't have to believe them,
How old are you, Jonathan?
14.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What did you like the most about the books?
I just like the adventure and the suspense of all the books and that.
Does the magic, the wizardry, the sorcery that is kind of woven into all of the plot and everything, does that trouble you at all, Jonathan?
No. Not at all.
Jonathan, thanks for the call. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you were Jonathan's parents, what would you do? Would you run into the bedroom and snatch the book out of his hand as he reads it, as many kids do, under the covers with the flashlight? 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines for your questions and your comments. Now, Connie Neal also says that the Harry Potter novels, she's willing to concede that the biggest concern that Christians have, there's some sort of satanic element when we talk about magic, sorcery, and witchcraft, that the devil is involved.
The devil is involved in this whole Harry Potter thing, but not at all the way Christians think. We have come out looking like fools. But the biggest thing that makes me sad is that there is a wealth here that we could turn around and redeem.
What do you think that wealth is? If you're a fan of the Harry Potter novels and you say, yeah, Connie Neal is right. There is a message here, a story here that we can turn around and redeem. And what are we doing? We're whining about it. We're staying away from it. And we're warning people to stay away because it's quote unquote satanic. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The Harry Potter novels, should you be reading them? Now, I'm not asking if, let's say, for instance, you're a school teacher. And you want to know what the kids are reading, and you want to stay up on this so that you know what the kids are reading, whether you're going to read them. I want to talk about, should we be reading these as we would read any other book for a business or for pleasure? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's another way of putting it for you. Has your mind changed on this? Were you, ambivalent about the books at the beginning, and then as you read them said, no, I'm not going any farther with this? Or as your kids read them, you decided, nope, we gave it a try, but no. Or have you gone the other direction? Wary and concerned, but you find out they weren't so bad after all. Would you buy the Half-Blood Prince, the latest Harry Potter novel, for your kids or your grandkids? It's open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And I know everybody's got an opinion on this, and I know most people have probably seen their kids reading the books or their kids' friends reading the books. The listeners with the best calls or emails during open lines here in the third hour of the program will get Dr. Gene Edward Veith's book, Reading Between the Lines, A Christian Guide to Literature, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Jan's up next calling from her car. Hi, Jan.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Good. I'm going to pull over here so I can be safe. I just wanted to say my son goes to a Lutheran school, and it's about split. You've got your Harry Potter parents and your non-Harry Potter parents.
Oh, really?
And I'm a Harry Potter parent. But the kids who are not allowed to read the books are obsessed with Harry Potter.
Really?
Oh, I'd really like to have a Harry Potter toy, but my mom won't let me. Can you tell me about the book? They're just obsessed with it. And the way I look at it, let them read the book, make up their own mind, talk to them about it in, a Christian, loving atmosphere, and let them make their own decisions, like any other literature.
Having read the books, I'm assuming you haven't read the sixth one yet, Jan?
No. In fact, we only got through about the third one. My 8-year-old at the time kind of got bored with it.
Well, you know what? What I found out, Jan, is that if you read the books quickly when they were first coming out, if your kids were young when they started, the books have become more and more advanced, longer, much longer than they originally were, and written at a higher and higher level. Of course, she's doing this because her fans are getting older and older as time goes
right
by, too. And it may have passed the kids by just in terms of literature.
Right. I mean, he was to the point where, you know what, this isn't fun anymore. So we stopped. And, someday when he's a little older, if he would like to pick them up and start reading them again, that's fine. He liked the movies. We don't obsess about it. It's just one of those things. It's make-believe, just like a lot of other things that are make-believe. Jesus is here and the devil's here. And, it's just book.
Jan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That argument's been made many times. We've talked about this on the program before. Look, fiction. What's the big deal? What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Diana, calling from her car. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, I am a Harry Potter fan. I have read the latest book already.
Wow.
I also, well, I got it. I was there, you know, when for the opening or at midnight on Friday, so and have read it. But I am also a Christian and a school teacher, so I've seen, you know, all the different aspects of Harry Potter. I just think that it's very important for parents to talk to their kids when they're reading it and to make sure that your kids know there is no Hogwarts to go to, you know, that you're not going to be able to go to Hogwarts. There's no, you know, witchcraft school available. And I think that that's important, that, that if you're talking with your kids as you read them, that's the most important thing.
So what kind of things would you say to your kids, having read the novels, and then don't give us any plot keys away, if you don't
okay.
mind, so that we're not a, serve as a spoiler for this.
Right. But no, I would never do that.
with the plots of the various six novels so far firmly in your memory, what kind of things would you say to your kid as they read it?
I think it's just the age-old plot, good and evil. I really think that that's just, every book is just about, you know, good versus evil. And, you know, good in Harry Potter, evil in Lord Voldemort. And that's, I would just discuss, you know, what is good in the book, what is not good in the book, what are they doing wrong, what are they doing right. And I heard you say earlier that Harry's a very good boy. And I think I would just talk to my kids, and my son's not anywhere near reading age, but I would just talk to my kids about what Harry does that's right.
Thank you very much, Diana.
Thank you.
What about the rest of you? So far, two, am I counting right? So far, kind of noncommittal, but I think three saying, yeah, read the books, warn your kids as you would with any book about the things that may be in there and the things that are true and the things that are false. Help them to see it in terms of, as Diana said, good versus evil, and read the books. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Rose is up next. She calls from her car. Hi, Rose.
Hello. I just wanted to let you know, my daughter is 18. She's been reading, she started reading Goosebump books when she was about 8 or 9.
Wow.
And, but we, I raised her in the church, and, we're Lutherans, and, you know, I had an older boy, and we watched Tales of the Crypt, and when Heather was watching that, we'd laugh at certain things and tell her it's not real and all that stuff. And I think people need to get a reality check that things are not real. Obviously, there are things out there that are very satanic, and I think the people need to read the books and talk to the children about the books that they're reading and make sure they understand the reality between the, what's real and what's not real. These books are not real. Obviously, they have some wizardry in there. I grew up in the 60s and 70s. There were books that I read that had wizardry in it, so it didn't affect me. My daughter's 18. She's graduated. She's got a very solid ground in her Christian Lutheran faith. And, you know, she loves the Lord. And she realizes this, this stuff is not real. It's fiction. And it's, some of it's kind of funny when you read it. And, you know, she gets a kick out of the funniness of it. She gets a kick out of the adventure of it. And that's all that I've ever, ever taught her is that, you know, you've got to understand some of this stuff is just not real. Now, there are some things that I feel that are too close to reality that I will not let her read. And I explain to her why not. When she gets out of the house, I can't control her. She's a big reading bug, so I can't control her picking up books. Eventually, she might get Stephen King's books and start reading them. But I know my daughter's grounded because I grounded her in her faith. And so she understands the difference between the demon, the demonic world and the Christ world. And she understands the difference between fiction and reality. So a lot has to do with communication, and I agree with those other two or three gals.
Thanks a lot.
You got to communicate.
Thank you very much, Rose. All right, we've taken three calls from women. What about the men? What do you think about the Harry Potter novels? Should Christians be reading them? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The consensus seems to be, let's remember that these are stories and that they're not real. So let's hear from some men. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Definitely not a man, but the next caller, Sally, calls from her car. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Todd. Well, I guess I want to say that, you know, I haven't even read the book myself. I just don't have time. But my daughter, well, I don't know, 6, 8 started. She's kind of lost interest, like I think, and it's not her reading level. I don't know. I guess the story's not as interesting anymore. But I think it's also very individually based on the child, because my daughter's going through a thing right now where, you know, if something, war pictures or something comes through on the news, she wants to change the channel. So I think it may just be she's in a time when it doesn't matter what it is, it's not going to appeal. And I think each parent really needs to look at what their child's interests and needs are at that time. You know, I think it might change 6 months from now. She might be reading it, and that's all right. We work through it.
Well,
you know?
I don't know if she'll be reading the novels, but she'll definitely, it'll change 6 months from now. If the progress of young girls through those years is any indication, if my daughter's any indication, it'll change.
Yeah.
Change about every week. Thank you very much, Sally.
Thanks.
Okay. Now, this is what I've noted, because we were in Walmart the other day, just kind of passing through, going to get something else, and they had a mountain of these things stacked up. This was right after the book came out. So we've got this green and purple mountain nearly blocking our way into the store. It's the Half-Blood Prince. They got the big display out there. They're selling these books. They're thick. And I say to my daughter, it says, $14.95 or something like that. For this big, fat, thick book, I mean, paperweight would cost you that much. And I said, do you want, she'd read the other ones. Do you want this book? She is a reader. She's been reading everything she can get her hands on. Do you want the book? Do you want the Half-Blood Prince? No. I said, are you done with them? No, I'll just wait until it comes out in paperback. That's too much to spend. So she's deferring her interest in this thing, which I don't think is that big at her age now, but she's deferring her interest in this until it comes out in paperback, and then she'll be happy to read it. Bernard calls from his car. Bernard, welcome.
Yes, thank you. I was listening, and I wondered two things. If a man had written Harry Potter, would there be the same enthusiasm? But I really do believe that I would encourage the literature, because I believe in the text of the commandment to not to bear false witness. It's hard to... when you constantly encourage reading false and mythical stories, it's kind of hard for you to place the Bible and spiritual work as the truth. And I think that culturally it's hard for people to recognize the truth because we're so involved in fantasy. So I have a 13-year-old. I wouldn't encourage it. I would encourage Mark Twain, which is fiction that talks about humanity. It talks about a godly solution. And I don't think that there are godly solutions presented in this.
Bernard, thank you very much. Okay, there's the first negative vote against Christians reading or encouraging their kids to read the Harry Potter novels. Well, honestly, if it's a choice between Twain and Rowling, there's no contest there in the mind of a parent who wants their kids to actually be reading books that are worth reading. But the question isn't so much, is it worth reading? The question is, should Christians be reading this? And I agree with Bernard's concerns that if we have a constant diet of fantasy and fantastic fiction of this kind, well, yes, we might lose the ability to distinguish between the two. But isn't that odd? It's those who oppose the Harry Potter novels that don't seem to draw a distinction between the two, between fiction and fact. Unless you're going to read like me, and I'm just an extremely boring guy, nothing but biography and history, you're going to encounter fiction someplace. We're talking about the Harry Potter novels. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
It's true. Every Christian desires a better understanding of the Bible. What is the key to rightly interpreting, understanding, and applying God's Word of Holy Scripture? As simple and as old-fashioned as it may sound, that key is an understanding of our sin and God's grace in Jesus Christ. In other words, the Bible's message of both law and gospel. For a better understanding of God's Word, check out Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for July, Handling the Word of Truth, Law, and Gospel in the Church Today. You can find the book at one of two CPH bookstore locations in St. Louis, one at 3558 South Jefferson in the city, the other on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Look for the CPH bookstore signs. Ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for July, It's called Handling the Word of Truth, Law and Gospel in the Church Today.
Salmon, more accurate than missiles.
Answers with Ken Ham, Australian lecturer and author. Well, Ken, when I was in America's Pacific Northwest recently, I saw something very amazing. That was the migration of salmon, an absolutely fascinating phenomenon.
You know, their migration actually reminds me of something. Scientists have to spend millions of dollars to invent very complicated computer systems to produce a guided missile. And think about it, these missiles don't always hit their target. But the Pacific salmon you saw have a built-in guidance system, and it makes these same scientists drool with envy. Research indicates that salmon are able to use the Earth's magnetic field and the position of the sun, moon, and stars, and they have the ability to detect the chemical composition of the stream from which they actually began their life. All this to enable salmon to return to their native stream to spawn. How could evolutionary scientists be so blind? The salmon's remarkable achievements, especially its amazing ability to navigate great distances with perfect accuracy, is impossible to explain as a result of purposeless and unguided evolution. When we stand in awe at man's achievements in building guided missiles, how much more should we worship the Creator God who made the salmon?
One of the most asked questions we receive at our apologetics ministry is, if we believe in Adam and Eve, then where did all the different races come from? We present the answer on our website, answersradio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. Have you ever watched a movie and noticed how brand names are clearly seen? You may hear characters request a certain soft drink or mention the specific name of their shampoo. That is called product placement, and companies pay thousands of dollars to have their products seen on the screen. Don't let your children be fooled by that. Help them to recognize that an ad is an ad, even if it takes place in the middle of a show. And just because the hero brushes with a certain brand of toothpaste, that is no guarantee it will make anyone's smile brighter. Jesus loves your children very much, enough to die on the cross for them. He does not want them to be misled or tricked by deceptive ads. Help your children to recognize product placement ads when they see them. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute at cmli.org.
AM 850 KFUO has a happy salute to our day sponsors on this Thursday, July 21st, 2005, Jack and Kathy Netzeband. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to AM 850 KFUO in celebration of their 49th wedding anniversary. Once again, we say thank you to Jack and Kathy Netzeband of Waterloo, Illinois, today's AM 850 KFUO day sponsors, and best wishes for a happy anniversary.
She uses these things as a literary device that are absolutely forbidden in the Bible, which is why it's understandable that some Christians choose not to go there. But Christians seem to have embraced wholeheartedly the Lord of the Rings and the sorcery in there and the Chronicles of Narnia.
That's Connie Neal. She's the author of The Gospel According to Harry Potter, pointing out what she sees as one of the inconsistencies in the way that Christians have reacted to Harry Potter versus these other novels that do include sorcery and witchcraft and wizardry. It's open lines for your questions and your comments. Should Christians be reading the Harry Potter series of novels? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Tomorrow on the program, a great conversation with Scott Klusendorf of Life Institute on defending the pro-life position. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. Back to the phones. Steve is calling from his car. Steve, welcome to Issues Etc.
You know, I was thinking, if we have to throw out literature that has witchcraft in it, I guess we need to throw out a lot of Shakespeare. If I recall from Macbeth, there was a couple of witches.
Three.
Yes. Now, I have a question for you, though.
All right.
Okay. Which do you think is more dangerous for your child to read? The Left Behind series or the Harry Potter series?
Ooh. Since I consider both to be equally fictional, but one purports not to be fiction, I would say probably the Left Behind series. I would much rather have them reading the Harry Potter series than reading the Left Behind series, because at least J.K. Rowling says, hey, guys, it's a story. Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye say, well, this is a fictionalized account of what will really, truly happen, but they couldn't be wronger. I think that's the more dangerous of the two, Steve. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's great insight there. Look, I mean, let me be honest with you. I'd rather have them reading Harry Potter than The Purpose-Driven Life. Yes, I said the word wronger. That's it. Look it up in the dictionary. I think it's in the new dictionaries. Wronger. More wrong? More wrongly? I don't know. I've been up too long today. Pat calls from St. Louis. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Pat, welcome. Would you turn your radio down, please?
Yeah, got
Thank
it.
You.
Okay.
All right, what's your question or comment?
Oh, I was just going to say that I have read all the Harry Potter ones. I'm in the middle of this one, the latest one right now. And I'm a Christian. I'm a Lutheran. And, you know, I don't put Harry Potter and God on the same pedestal at all. You know, it's a story. It's a story just like any other fictional story. And it's fun. It's interesting. But, you know, it's out of my head then. You know? You know, it's just like a book that you read and, you know, but I don't put any faith into it. You know, I keep that separate.
Pat, thank you so much. All right, now we've got the women stacking up here. We've got Jan and Diane and Rose and Sally and several others, Pat, just on the line there, that are not really seeing a big problem with the Harry Potter novels. What's the big deal? What about the rest of you? Do you agree or disagree with the ladies here? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, coming back to something that Steve said just a minute ago, you know, if we're going to avoid literature that involves witchcraft or wizardry or sorcery, then one of the first things that must go, he mentioned Shakespeare's Macbeth, that begins, if you know this very famous play from Shakespeare, begins with a blank stage, a cauldron, and three witches. And they're the ones who actually are the chorus of the story of Macbeth, and they tell the tragic tale of Macbeth. Now, I would add to that list, of course, you would have to add, and this is nothing new, you'd have to add, as Connie Neal points out, if you're going to do away with fiction that deals with this subject and incorporates this subject into its, you know, Macbeth is really somewhat innocuous, but it's told by these three witches, The Lord of the Rings, that whole series of books there. In fact, you'd have to do away with everything that Tolkien wrote regarding Middle Earth. He not only wrote Lord of the Rings, he also wrote The Silmarillion. He also wrote some unfinished stories that involved this magical, mystical world of Middle Earth. So those would have to be done away with. He also wrote a fair number of fairy tales too. He was just fascinated as a professor of ancient English literature with the whole Beowulf and fairy tale Arthurian legend. Oh, you'd have to do away with the Arthurian legend, too. I'm sorry, forgot about that one. And let's see, Chronicles of Narnia, that would be included, I think. You know, I wonder, the Star Wars trilogy, although they call it The Force, it's not a trilogy anymore, it's now six movies, whatever that is. They call it The Force, but written 50 years ago, it would have been called magic. Darth Vader would have been Lord Voldemort and Luke Skywalker and or the other good people in there would be Harry Potter and his friends. They're using an unseen force to their ends, either good or bad. There's actually a section of the Bible you might have to get rid of, too. I'll come back to that in a minute. It's Open Lines this Thursday. My question for you, should Christians read the Harry Potter novels? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. And calls from Crestwood. Hi, Ann.
Oh, good afternoon. I'm kind of amazed that anyone would be against this because I think to get a child to read a book is amazing in the world we live in today with MTV and pornography on the computer. To get children just so excited about a book that might be 700 pages long. I would have done anything to get my son to read, and I don't mean for him to read trash or something, but, I mean, we have not read the books. We've been watching the movies the past few nights, actually, and I've just seen that Harry is this brave person. The little trio of friends, they're always in the search for truth to try to find out what the truth is, even though they've been told they're not to do such and such. They're disobedient, but their passion for truth outrides that. And then in the movies, Harry is usually willing to give up his life to save one of his friends. So I think there's a lot of good points to this, but like I said, I have not read the books.
So is it just that you haven't had the time, or you're just preferring to, as they say, wait till the movie comes out?
No, not necessarily. I think it's about time that I start picking up these books because I'm fascinated with Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, and actually I get the main characters mixed up. They seem like they could be brothers. It's about time that I think I pick up the books and stop being lazy and just watching the movie.
Anne, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I don't want to mischaracterize Anne here, but she says, look, it gets the kids reading, and that's good. It gets the kids reading. The funny thing is, and you might scoff at Anne's reasoning there, but I've heard that very same reasoning. Yes, the purpose-driven life might be theological nonsense, but at least it gets people thinking about the Bible, or at least it gets people reading Christian things rather than non-Christian things. Well, if it works for as an excuse to read the purpose-driven life, it would certainly work as an excuse for reading the Harry Potter novels. Peggy calls from her car. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. A couple things plus a suggestion. We have to be careful, I think, that the means justify the end there. Just reading, I don't think, is a reason to read material of any sort. But also I wonder, when we consider what we want our children to read, what would it be? Would we use the same sort of measure if they wanted to read a book with strong sexual content? And doesn't Harry Potter use sorcery? So in that sense, it leaves God totally out.
All right. Thank you very much, Peggy. Now, your concerns are right, and that's exactly what I was saying after Anne's call, which is, and Anne said it herself, it's not that we want our kids reading trash. Now, I guess it depends on what you define as trash. We would have very, very little material on the shelves of Barnes & Noble, or for that matter, any Christian bookstore. Very, very little there if we got rid of all the trash. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And your concerns are right, Peggy, that it's not just about getting the kids to read. We wouldn't want to use that as a blank check for having them consume just about anything they want. Christy calls from St. Louis. Hi, Christy.
Hi. I have read all the books except the latest, the Harry Potter series, and I found nothing wrong with them in the beginning at all. I found them all very enjoyable. But I guess as the latest ones keep coming out, I thought I'd just mention something that's been more like a little concern, kind of a nagging concern, is it's sending a message about that some aspects of witchcraft might be okay. I know I played with it a little in college, which was messing with fire, and I didn't see anything wrong with it. Of course, I didn't have any, there wasn't anything like reading the Harry Potter. I guess that's what my concern is. Children that grow up with it might think that there's some good aspects to sorcery or witchcraft, or, you know, leading into problems with Wicca. Mm. That was my concern.
Christy, that's a great point to make. And that is, you know, I've listened for years now to the concerns, the pro and the con on the Harry Potter thing. And this is the strongest concern that I think a Christian ought to have. I don't think it's insurmountable, but I do believe it is a legitimate concern. And snicker if you will, but if the Harry Potter novels or any other literature that depicts the use of magic as, say, white magic versus black magic, I cannot think of a better example than Gandalf the White versus the various nefarious characters in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. He uses magic toward good. If that somehow leaves the impression with the impressionable listener that these things, which Scripture does clearly forbid, have a good side to them, or can somehow be used for good, or can be used in and then justifies the means. Yes, it's a bad means, but we're using it for good, or as an entree into, well, Wicca is more paganism than it is witchcraft, or as an entree into those things. That is a concern that should be first and foremost on the mind of every Christian if they're talking about the Harry Potter stuff or the Narnia stuff. Good witch, bad witch? Good wizard, bad wizard? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. An email from Jonathan who says, I'm a 27-year-old fan of Harry Potter. Both my sons are too young to read them. As I see it, the biggest difference between the magic of Harry Potter and the magic of the real world is that magic in Harry Potter's world is not a belief system. Rather, it simply functions as an alternate technology. That's what I was trying to say before. See, I need my listeners to fill the gaps my brain is filled with. Swing a wand, say a few words, and it works in much the same way as flicking a light switch turns on the lights. Jonathan goes on, one of the things I like about the books is that much care is taken in the context of the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, that students should be taught not only how to perform magic, but also how to do it in a way that promotes good rather than evil. That's true. It is, in effect, an allegory for our own use of technology, which can be used for both good and evil, depending on our choices. Oh, my goodness. Who is Jonathan? Where did he come from? I would like to say he must have been listening to the show, but I can't take credit for that. Really, email us back, Jonathan. You're going to get a copy of this book from Dr. Jean Edward Veith, Reading Between the Lines. You deserve it. If I were Rick Warren, I'd say you earned it, but you didn't. Listen to what Jonathan is saying here. First of all, about the novel itself. What if J.K. Rowling actually came out after she got done with all seven novels, let's say 3 or 4 years from now, and started granting interviews, which she very rarely does, and said, folks, all it is an allegory. I was writing a huge allegory about the dangers of the right and wrong use of technology. That's all I was writing about. It wasn't about wizards. It was about the dangers of the right and wrong use of technology. This has been pointed out by other guests now that Jonathan sparks my memory, and that is, in the Harry Potter novels, magic isn't a belief system. Not for those who practice it for good. It is merely a mechanism. In fact, much is made of this. If you've ever seen the movies, much is made of this, that it doesn't really matter whether you believe it can work or not. If you say it right and get the flick of your wrist just so, it'll work. Like technology. But the other point that Jonathan makes, I think he didn't intend to make, but I'll extend it out from what Jonathan had to say. One of the biggest criticisms I have of the church today is its uncritical use of technology. They believe technology to be neutral. Since we have it, we must be able to use it, and it cannot ever be used toward bad ends. So if we've got a projector and a big screen, use it because technology is neutral, not ever taking into account how the technology can shape what the church believes and what the church practices. An uncritical use of technology, as uncritical as anyone might accuse J.K. Rowling of presenting the use of magic in her novels. I'm saving this. This one, if I had a wall, this one would go on the wall. Thank you very much, Jonathan. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Very fruitful. I mean, just if it was just for Jonathan's email, it's worth all the work. And thanks to everybody else who's called in on that subject. Now, before we go, I would like to respond to some statements that were made by a liberal theologian. It's a minister who chairs the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, reacting to President George W. Bush's announcement that he is appointing to the Supreme Court, pending approval, Judge John Roberts. This minister says that Judge John Roberts is a threat to religious liberty. This is the Reverend Lois Powell, and she believes that John Roberts, if he holds the position that he thinks he does on the issue of abortion, is not just against reproductive choice or reproductive liberty, but actual actual religious liberty. The Reverend Lois Powell says that her church and others in the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice consider abortion, yes, a religious right.
As a person of faith in the United Church of Christ, I am very concerned that religious freedoms must be protected and that any nominee must recognize deeply held positions of faith, of diversity around issues of reproductive choice.
Now, when I first heard this, I thought, okay, that's until the very last two words, I thought to myself, well, she's just defending religious liberty. And then she tied religious liberty to reproductive choice. What is she saying? Listen carefully to this. This is an argument. When I heard it, we were getting ready to go back on the air, and I heard it, I said to my producer, that's one I haven't heard before. That is an argument in favor of abortion. I thought I'd heard it all. That was one I've never heard before. Reproductive choice as religious liberty. And so, of course, my interest was piqued. Well, here again is the Reverend Powell of the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. She says that women have a religious right to abortion.
It's a religious liberty issue because different faith traditions believe different things about when protectable human life begins, when personhood begins, personhood that should be protected by law. The Roe decision recognized this. For some people, protectable human life actually begins at birth.
I was shocked, not because she believes it, but I've never heard anyone frame the debate this way yet, and I wonder whether or not this is an avenue that we simply have not seen. How do you respond to someone who says, hey, it's an article of faith? My religion, or my version of my religion, says that life begins at birth. And for you to say that I cannot abort a child is a violation of my religious freedom because I hold that life begins at birth as part of my religious beliefs. You're saying I can't practice my religion. My religion says life begins at birth, she says. So to practice and advocate abortion is part of my religious practice. I mean, we've said for a long time, many have said for a long time, that the sacrament of radical feminism is abortion. I think that's Rush Limbaugh who first coined that term for abortion and the radical feminist movement. He calls it their sacrament. But this is different. This is a twist from the Reverend Powell, who says that for her to advocate, practice, and encourage and support abortion is, in fact, an exercise of her religious freedom. Well, you know what? By that reading, Jim Jones had the right to hand out the Kool-Aid down there in Guyana, didn't he? You remember Jim Jones back in the mid-70s, who killed off most, if not all, of his followers, including himself and a senator or a congressman or two. Down there in Guyana, Jonestown or Jim Jonestown, and it was the Kool-Aid. Hey, that was part of their religious freedom. And he had every right to do it. If murder is part of your religious freedom. Finally, here's the Reverend Lois Powell, board chairperson for the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, saying that abortion can be viewed as a religious liberty issue.
Women who are faced with unplanned or unwanted pregnancy will go to their conscience, to the teachings of their religious traditions, and if abortion is eliminated, it will close off an option that can be a moral decision to terminate a pregnancy that is in line with her own religious faith.
I'm just still stunned. I've never heard this before, and I consider myself a pretty smart guy. I never even anticipated this argument before. I think there's a good response to it, of course. We've already made a bit of one here, but I have never heard that argument before. Hey, I believe that life begins at birth, so abortion becomes a religious liberty issue for me. You may believe that life begins at conception, and so you stand against abortion, but don't stand in the way of my religious liberty because I happen to believe, well, what if a guy came along and says, I believe that life begins at 2? What? You know, there are some religions who believe that African Americans are inferior. Hey, religious liberty. if they want to practice slavery or if they want to practice extermination of that or any other skin color? Religious liberty. In fact, this argument is really weak because, and I'll come back to this in just a second, it proves too much. It proves way too much. A quick call here from Steve calling from Fenton. Steve, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well.
Those comments are just astounding, but actually I was calling a couple of comments about the Harry Potter issue. And I guess one was that I think the book can be dangerous because there really is, you know, an occult today. There is a New Age movement and witchcraft out there. And in the wrong person who's maybe susceptible to that, or if it's not read with discernment, I think it can open some doors into that lifestyle.
Steve, thank you very much. Our time grows short here. There's no doubt that caution should be exercised. And those concerns should all be first on the top of burner all the time when dealing with something like Harry Potter or any other literature that employs, even as a literary device, the use of magic for both good and evil. What's the difference? How does the Bible deal with magic? As evil. But it talks about it. The Witch of Endor summons up the soul of spirit of the prophet Samuel, straight up out of the netherworld. But it is dealt with as evil. So any literature that proposes sorcery or wizardry or magic as a tool for good or a neutral tool ought to be handled with that kind of caution. But the key is in what Steve had to say, reading it with discernment. Okay, the argument proves too much that she's making there about religious liberty because there are no bounds upon this. If I can assert, and she's not talking about what her church believes, she's talking about what she believes. If I can assert that I believe a certain thing as part of my religious beliefs and say for you to stop me from acting upon that belief is a violation of my religious liberty, not only distorts the whole nation of what religious liberty is, but also can be used to justify anything, as evidenced by the fact that she uses it to justify abortion. Now, Issues Etc. is underwritten in part by LCMS World Relief. When you surf the web tonight, when you get home, find out more about the Christ-centered, cross-focused efforts of LCMS World Relief at our website, issuesetc.org, or to find out more, contact them here in St. Louis, area code 314-996-1683, 314-996-1683. Sunday night on the program at 10 o'clock, the Crusades. Dr. Thomas Madden of St. Louis University will join us Sunday night from 10 to 11 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. He is probably the foremost expert on the Crusades that we've got in this area, and we'll be talking with him Sunday night on the program. Then Monday on the program, Christ in Isaiah. This should be pretty easy. Christ in Isaiah with Dr. Andy Bartelt of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.